You want to put all the blame on the government, you're free to do that. I am equally free to say to you that for quite some time, I was concerned about what I was seeing across this country. And I remember speaking to a friend of mine who was a doctor, and he agreed. He said, this country has the perfect conditions for the spread of COVID, if anything gets into society. Because we should always remember this. COVID is tricky and sneaky. It takes advantage of all of your vulnerabilities. And just when you think it isn't there, it can be. So once people are coming into Barbados and they can bring COVID into the community by sometimes lax policies and stuff like that, you run the risk of this thing being out there among us. Like how I said we should be dealing with it all like Noah.
Yeah.
A lot of people, trust me, there are a lot of people who are behaving as though they're only in the prison and the West Coast here.
I don't doubt you, there are persons out there, but I'm saying not in the majority. But I take what you're saying, and it is true, because persons who, if from May going right down, we followed and the numbers were down. If we had kept our, like how Trinidad did and other countries, restricted persons, the influx, especially coming from the UK. But because we felt, well, our numbers were down, nobody expected that these sudden influx of visitors would bring it in so quickly. I mean, some persons recognize it, but the fact that they came in, they brought COVID, and not only that, they brought it, but as you said, the government reduced the number of days to down to 3 days, from 14 to 7, then down to 3, and then those persons, even quarantine, decided to break it. So those persons who were outside, who felt comfortable because they felt, well, the government had this under control from May right on, we haven't seen large numbers, they were caught unaware. So but I'm saying this way that we keep looking at the locals. I am saying, yes, there would be a minority who would do this, but I think you have to go further back. And if you saw that the numbers were down from March, April, May, et cetera, then coming into to December, you have to say, now, what were the factors impacting on us and for these numbers at this time? How would it impact our lab when we open it? What about those persons coming from high-risk country? These are the things that not seeing have to be taken, that were taken into consideration in any serious way.
All I would say to you, hindsight, 2020 vision.
Yeah, of course. Thank you, David. Have a good morning. Yes.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Mr. Ellis.
Yes, sir.
A blessed day to you, sir.
How are you?
Oh, I am blessed. Thanks. I want to wish you and the family and Barbados and the station the best for the year, because I can see and we can all sense that this year is not going to be a very easy year for us at all. It's going to be a year of trying to keep things together and to preserve what we have and try to assist others if we can do that as well. You know, whatever happens, we got to give God thanks and praise that we are still breathing and we are not as bad as some would like us to be or others are. You know, I think it's a blessing that we have here and a good country we have. And I want to support it. That does not mean that when there is need to be concerned and to talk about things, that you shouldn't do it. Because, you know, Mr. Ellis, that there are persons who believe that you should not express how you see things are, like the person who called earlier and was critical about the German. And I'll tell you this.
I've lived through that under the Democratic Labour Party too. So I know how to get that. These people from these two political camps can get pretty bad when they're ready. You know?
Well,
as far as they're concerned, there's nobody else but their party. And their party must always be protected irrespective of, you know, to the detriment of the rest of the people of this country. Does that make sense?
No. Ms. Ellis, I really enjoyed your conversation with Dr. Ladder. I mean, this man has lots of knowledge and experiences and research and so on. And I don't know why someone would think so negatively about him and your conversation. It's
because the whole idea here is simple. There are many, many Barbadians who believed that the world begins and ends with Barbadians.
Mr. Ellis, when this gentleman, when you spoke to him, he said he lived in Barbados for 20 years or been coming for 20 years.
Problems. There are people like that.
Yeah.
And it does not make sense. So that this idea is ultimately this is what the plan is. If you are a visitor or a foreigner living in Barbados, no matter what qualifications you have, those qualifications are not good for Barbados, because the greatest qualification that you must have is a Bajan accent. And if you don't have that, then don't get involved in what Barbadians are discussing, because we will cut your neck off, figuratively, you know? That's what this is about. We are like that. Don't forget who we really are, you know? I don't. I mean, I say things a bit boldly at times, but even people like me can come under fire for saying something like this because of that kind of narrow thinking, which on the one hand, we want to accept things from people abroad. We need tourists, their dollars, this, that, and the next. We take advice from PAHO and other external agencies and multilateral agencies. You take their money. But on the other, you can't say certain things once you are in Barbados. That can't
now,
be. We are following the science. We got to follow common sense too.
I remember with one of the interviews with the Minister of Health and the Prime Minister, he said that they were following the professionals, they're listening to the World Health Organization, those people who were talking to them. When someone questioned them about Bam had made a suggestion to them. And he said, we are following the science. Now, the German tall boy, he really put his foot in his mouth when he forgot that. When the minister said, we are following the science. Now, Bam had advised them and gave their suggestion, but he said they were listening to Bam. I mean, to the World Health Organization, you know. But I'll tell you, one thing that I'm concerned about this is that when I hear they're talking about the backlog, but yet, and they're having hundreds and maybe a thousand or two coming on a daily basis. Now, but yet, we have the tourists coming and compounding that situation. And, you know, what I'm worried is that we have to pay the bill. And the Prime Minister did. I can understand what she was saying about our reputation and so on of that kind. I can understand that. But then I don't know if she realized that when we having all these tourists still coming and having to stay in the hotel rooms longer than they should, that it's an additional cost. It's piling up all the time. And I remember Dr. Lord said, when he was speaking the other day, he suggested, I think it was on your morning program, he said his thought was that Barbados should close down the airport for at least 2 weeks or so until we can bring this thing under control. And that makes a lot of sense to me, because then what we are doing is going deeper into the mire. Let me share something
with you that is relevant here. I'm looking at the Daily Mail in England. And if it can be there, given the traffic between Britain and Barbados, it could be here. A Brazilian coronavirus variant that experts fear could make vaccines less effective may have first emerged in Britain in November. It emerged today as number 10 was accused of putting lives at risk by being too slow to close the borders. The head of a new government-led research unit dedicated to and that one of them has already been detected in Britain. Professor Wendy Barclay, a virologist at Imperial College London, also admitted the mutated virus was introduced to the UK some time ago, but she did not reveal how widespread it was. So we have been spending time talking a lot about the British variant, but they are saying now that the Brazilian had been in Britain since November, and by extension, we may well be having to deal, like Britain, with two variants right now. At least two. Britain has tried to shut out traffic from South Africa to keep out that one. But this is where we are.
Yes. It needs to be very concerned, and we are very concerned about it. Now, I want to move on to another matter, if I can. I want to give my support to the government for leasing the buyer's home at Culloden Farm. I really do. In that property has been lying in fallow for a long time. And to lease it, then to rent it or lease it to this other body, I think is...
The Duke of Edinburgh scheme,
right.
I think that's what it
now,
is that we're talking
now,
about.
And yes, and the thing is that it is going to be used for Barbadian youth to develop them and to give them training for the future and for the future of Barbados. And I want to really give government kudos for this, because to have that property, such a nice property like that, land like that, for such a long time, eventually some person who is not a non-thinking person would go and light it to fire and burn it down and destroy it. And I am saying that I want to compliment the government on this. I understand. I did not hear Mr. Prescott's contribution in Parliament. I didn't hear that at all. But he would have his concern. But I think that what the government has done is notable, and I want to compliment them for it. I also would like them to look at, if possible, Kampala, the other place down there by Paradise. I believe that's a property down there that needs not to lay around like that. Because then these things are historic, and these things are valuable.
I hear the criticism that has come from Trevor Prescott and David Denny about this thing. Can a compromise be struck by, first of all, even though it is going to be leased to the Duke of Edinburgh scheme, that doesn't mean that the place should be named after the Duke of Edinburgh. So the first order of business is to call it Arabarra House or something like that, you know, so that you establish it in the minds of all concerned as a place where Arabarra spent a lot of his time. I think that at the end of the day, we ought to be concerned about the fact that that place has been left in the state that it is in for so long. I mean, you go there by the National Insurance Building and you see it during the car park, and you just shake your head and see there's another example of how we treat our icons and the places where they have spent so much time. Culloden Farm, having been the official residence of the Prime Minister of Barbados at a time when Barbados got its political independence as well. So I think I hear their concerns about references to the Duke of Edinburgh, but that leasing it does not stop us from having the house named after Arabarra.
That's right.
And to assert that.
And the property is going to still remain named Culloden Farm. Let me say this to you, Mr. I want to make another pertinent point here, and it's this. All of the sugar-coating words that I heard my Prime Minister use yesterday, I want to also remind her Now, she used words that was very convenient, not that they were not appropriate. When she mentioned that there were those who were saying that the non-contributory increase would not happen and couldn't happen, but I noticed carefully that she did not mention, or she forgot, or conveniently forgot, to mention that out of her own mouth, she said that there were going to be parity in the increase between the non-contributory pensioners and the I am a pensioner, and I've contributed to my pension, and we have no quarrels about the increase for those who were getting less than what they should have gotten or would help them to survive. But don't open your mouth and say to the nation that there will be parity and then conveniently forgot, or I've already
put I don't think that that's again, I don't know that I can go with you completely with this, in the sense that
she forgot.
I believe a lot of things have been overtaken by this COVID crisis, you know.
No, but Ms. Ellis, don't go that road. This was before the crisis. Don't go
precisely
that
road. It was before the crisis, but that does not mean that the quest to have parity was not something that could have been worked on subsequent to when it was announced, and therefore that it could, it certainly is possible.
May I say that? No, how could you say that? What was it not done for the non-contributory? And if it was being done then,
since
how
March,
come you would have
last year?
Mr. Lesk, for God's sake, don't make it. Look,
and
make
circumstances it. Right now do not, in my judgment, I mean, let me put it this way. At the end of the day, it's all about priorities. And I know that if you look at it, you will say the government has done some things that in your judgment, you don't know that they deserve that kind of priority over what you're talking about. But ultimately, you've got to look at recurrent costs as well.
How come yesterday one was mentioned and not the other? How come yesterday it was mentioned, that was mentioned, and not the other? Explain that to me.
I can't explain it. It's for the government to explain. I can only live within the context of what I see as the picture that confronts us all, and to suggest to you that, you know, a lot of things that government has promised could easily have been derailed by the fact that we've had to pay a lot more attention to COVID. A lot of money has had to be spent on COVID as well. You know, the facilities and the testing and all of that.
Just before we turn to David is joining us via Zoom. We're having some issues with our Wi-Fi connection at the moment, so periodically we are losing his audio. It is not anything that's being done by the producer. We have our team working to ensure that that problem is corrected. We do ask you to bear with us if we lose audio from time to time. David, back to you.
Thank you very much, Dennis. Dr. Brastax, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Good morning. It's still morning. It's 19 minutes after 11.
Yes, it's good morning. Good morning to your listeners. Mr. Ellis, I heard some callers calling saying, why the officers keep a bus crawl in this pandemic? But I want to know why. We know the pandemic. We weren't blind. We see what was going on in England. So why we let 18,000 or more visitors coming around December time, and the authorities didn't tell the people be on the guard, they're telling them nothing? They could have said, okay, we will cancel fest for December. But they let the fest go on. But so you can't blame the people that keep the bus crawl. Call the bunny again up there, we know that this is that then COVID boat here, and we were just looking at the tourists coming in for the money. looking for tourists on ground, but nothing else. We were looking at the backlash after.
The government or the people?
The government and the government, they may look at the backlash after, because they may come out and tell the public, be on your guard, wear your mask, you got tourists on. They could have come out and say that too. They have a lot of tourists on island. We will hold off the feds for the time being. Be on your guard. We ain't get all this thing on the radio. But a lot of things were happening in the UK. That way was spreading out there fast. And the tourists were still coming. Tourists were still coming from out there here. Anyhow, Mr. Ellis and Lisa, the tourism minister, she received a lot of praises from the cruise ship. But the cruise ship visitors were come. They were from the ship to the airport. But she believed that she could let the planes come in and try the same thing by backfire. Mr. Ellis, are there 3,000 samples in backlog?
Are we gotten so pardon quickly? Me? Are
hello?
We moved so quickly from 1,000, from where we were to over 1,000 cases right now? But the more important issue is, how can we get out of this? How can we avoid moving to 2,000 in another 2 to 3 weeks? That's what we need to concentrate on. And that requires action on the part of the government, the testing and the facilities. It also requires a certain change in lifestyle and stuff by the people who live here. And
so,
there is a need to learn from the lesson of the West Coast cluster, or clusters as they call it.
Mm-hmm.
Recognize that there are a lot of people who do not live on the West Coast, who work with people from the West Coast. In one form or the other, they work closely together. And therefore, there is a strong potential to have that West Coast cluster, which, as the government is constantly referring to it, make its way through the rest of the society. Because we really work closely together. We don't necessarily socialize together. That's a reality. But you work together, and you know you have people. You work in various capacities. So that's what we have to watch. So the people who are bar hopping and that sort of thing right now need to be very, very careful. I've spoken to people who didn't leave their homes, and COVID came to them.
So, Mr. Ellis,
I brought it home and stuff like that. You know.
Okay, Mr. Ellis. So, planes still coming into the island now, right? So, how are we going to get out of this backlog when we still got like tourists coming in? How are we gonna get out of this 3,000 backlog samples?
Well, you know, this is a very interesting debate that continues, which is, it's a choice between life and livelihoods.
Mm-hmm.
That you may not die from COVID, but when you are starved for money, you could die from starvation. When you can't work, when you have nothing, and you know full well, the way that Barbados has sought to deal with this problem initially is to go and say, look, we handled ourselves well financially so far, so lend us some money on concessionary terms. Nobody who's running a country wants to be in a position where they have to rely almost exclusively on borrowings to get through. So that is going to motivate the leadership of the country to see how they can make a dollar. And you do it on a wing and a prayer. You're hopeful that the measures that you have in place are working and can stave off this particular disease. You hope that if something goes wrong, that you can move very quickly to fill the breach.
Okay.
But COVID can overwhelm facilities very quickly, as we've seen here.
Mm-hmm. All right, my last one. How many dengue deaths they had in Barbados, Mr. Ellis?
They haven't been able to tell us. We've asked about that, and we don't know yet. There's some suggestion, as you've heard, that the kind of facilities that they need to test for dengue. They mm-hmm. also need those facilities to do testing for some of those facilities to test for the COVID. So as a result, we are not getting enough information on the dengue deaths or the spread of dengue in the community.
Okay. Oh, you have a good day.
You do too. Thank you very much.